Raja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Nityalila Parveshakasha Om Vishnupada Paramahamsa Parveshakacharya Srimad Divine Grace Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Om Vishnupada Paramahamsa Parivrashakacharya Ashtotra Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Antakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Narmacharya Haridas Thakur Ki ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Prem Se Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Garadara Srivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gop Gopinath Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Vrindavan Mathura Dham Ki Navadeep Dham ki, Jagannath Puri Dham ki, Gangamai Yamunamai ki, Bhakti Devi Tulsi Maharani ki, Sankirtan Yajna ki, Brihad Mudanga ki, Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda ki, Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. 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 All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Sri Jayashila Prabhupada ki, Jai. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayanam Namaskritya Naranchaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudirayet Before reciting this Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances onto the personality of Godhead, Narayana, onto Naranarayan Rishi, the supermost human beings, onto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and onto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. So today we are reading from Canto number 3, chapter 16, verse number 9. Esham Bibarmi Aham Akhanda Vaikunta Yoga Maya Vibhutihi Amala Angri Rajaha Kiritaihi Vipran Tu Kaha na Vishaheta Yat Arhana Ambaha Ambaha Sadhyaha Punati Saha Chandralalama Lokan Esham Bibarmi Aham Akanda Vaikunta Yoga Maya Vibhutir Amalangri Rajah Kiritaihi Vipramstukona Vishaheta Yat Arhanam Vipramstu Kona Vishaheta Yet Arhanam Baha Sadhyaha Punati Saha Chandra Lalama Lokan एषां बिभर्मि अहम् अखण्ड वैकुण्ठ योगा माया विभूतिरमलांग्रि रजः किरीटैः विप्रांस्तु को न विषहेत यद् अर्हनाम्बः सद्यः पुनाति सहचन्द्र ललाम लोकान् एषां बिभर्मि अहम् अखण्ड वैकुण्ठ योगा माया विभूतिर अमलांग्रि रजः किरीटैः विप्रांस्तु को न विषहेत यद् अर्हनाम्बः सद्यः पुनाति सहचन्द्र ललाम लोकान् एषां बिभर्मि अहम् अखण्ड वैकुण्ठ योगा माया विभूतिरमलांग्रि रजः किरीटैः विप्रांस्तु को न विषहेत यद् अर्हनाम्बः चन्द्र पुनामलोका विषहेत सद्या पुनाति चन्द्र रामलोकान् एषां विभाण्यहमखण्ड विकुण्ठ योगा सद्या पुनाति सहचन्द्र ललामलोकान् एषां विभर्म्यहमखण्ड विकुण्ठ योगा माया विभूतिरमलांग्रि रजा किरीटै विप्रांस्तु को न विषहेत यदनहनाम्बः सद्यः पुनाति चन्द्रलालामलोकम् Okay. Esha of the Brahmanas. Bibarmi I bear. Aham I. Akhanda unbroken. Vikunta unobstructed. Yoga Maya internal energy. Vibhutihi opulence. Amala pure. Angrihi of the feet. Rajaha the dust. Kiritaihi on my helmet. Vipran the Brahmanas. Tu then. Kaha who. Na not. Vishaheta carry. Yat of the Supreme Lord. Archana Ambaha water which has washed the feet. Sadyaha at once. Punati sanctifies. Saha along with. Chandralama Lord Shiva. Lokan the three worlds. Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. I am the master of my unobstructed internal energy, and the water of the Ganges is the remnant left after my feet are washed. That water sanctifies the three worlds along with Lord Shiva, who bears it on his head. If I can take the dust of the feet of the Vaishnava on my head, who will refuse to do the same? Purport. The difference between the internal and external energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is that in the internal energy or in the spiritual world, all the potent opulences are undisturbed, whereas in the external or material energy, all the opulences are temporary manifestations. The Lord's supremacy is equal in both the spiritual and the material worlds, but the spiritual world is called the kingdom of God, and the material world is called the kingdom of Maya. Maya refers to that which is not actually fact. The opulence of the material world is a reflection. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that this material world is just like a tree whose roots are up and branches are down. This means that the material world is a shadow of the spiritual world. Real opulence is in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, the predominating deity is the Lord Himself, whereas in the material world, there are many lords. That is the difference between internal and external energies. The Lord says that although He is the predominating factor of the internal energy, and although the material world is sanctified just by the water that has washed His feet, He has the greatest respect for the Brahmana and the Vaishnava. When the Lord Himself offers so much respect to the Vaishnava and the Brahmana, how can one deny such respect to such personalities? Om Ajnanatimira Andasya Jnana Janashalakaya Chakshurunmitam Ena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Ena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Utapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagurujatam Sahagana Ragunatanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha Namavam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Itinamine Namaste Saraswate Devi Gauravani Pracharine Irvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratvishe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute तप्तकांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासति गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। So I seek the blessings of all the devotees. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. So today we are reading from the 16th chapter, verse number 9. So in the beginning verses of this chapter, basically Lord Vishnu, he basically apologizes to the four Kumaras for the offense committed by Jay and Vijaya. And at the same time, he basically glorifies the position of a Brahmana or a Vaishnava. So in the current verse also, as it is said, the Lord speaks that I am the master of my unobstructed internal energy, and the water of the Ganges is the remnant left after my feet are washed. That water sanctifies the three worlds along with Lord Shiva, who bears it on his head. If I can take the dust of the feet of the Vaishnava on my head, who will refuse to do the same? So in this way we can see there are two points made in this sloka. The first one is about the Lord's potencies, how the Lord is a master of his internal potency which is unbroken. And the second point he makes is basically how he himself offers a great respect towards the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas, that by taking the dust of the feet and then putting on his own head. So the first topic is basically regarding the Lord's potencies, as it is said in the first line, Akhanda Vikunta Yoga, which means the unbroken, unobstructed internal potency of the Supreme Lord. So let's first discuss about the Supreme Lord's potencies, then I will also discuss about the position of a Brahmana or a Vaishnava. So the first one is about the Lord's potencies. As you all are aware, that the Lord has three potencies, which is internal potency or Antaranga Shakti, and the marginal potency or Tatastha Shakti, and external potency or Bahiranga Shakti. And the living entities actually belongs to the Tatastha Shakti or the marginal potency of the Lord. And these actually can be broadly be classified in two different categories. The first category we can call them as liberated souls, and the second category we can call them as conditioned souls. So, and this, the spiritual world is basically made up of this internal potency of the Lord along with its liberated soul constitutes the spiritual world or the Vaikuntha. Whereas this external potency or the Bahiranga Shakti along with its conditioned souls constitutes a material world. And it is said that basically the Lord is master of both the spiritual world and the material world, but however only the spiritual world is referred to here as the kingdom of God, whereas the spiritual world is referred as the kingdom of God and the material world is referred as the kingdom of Maya. Because in the spiritual world, each and every living entity is actually surrendered to the Supreme Lord, are engaged in the service of the Supreme Lord, and they are aware that the Lord is the ultimate and supreme proprietor. But whereas in the material world, the jivas, the living entities, are actually under ignorance, and sometimes they may think that, you know, either some different demigods or some powerful personalities are actually the controllers, and they falsely surrender and worship those demigods. That is the reason why the material world is also called as the kingdom of Maya. It is like, let's say that, for example, that a person is having two houses. Let's say he owns two houses. And so he is a proprietor of two houses. But let's say that in one house, he stays with his family, with his wife and children. And let's say the second house, he just like rents it out to somebody else, like some other different family. So the person who is living in the second house may also sometimes refer to that house as, let's say someone asks, where do you live? He says, this is my house. Even though it's not his house, but he's not wrong in one sense that when he says his house. So in the same way, this material world, even though the Lord is ultimate controller and proprietor of the material world also, but however, it is referred to as the kingdom of Maya or Durga. So now let's try to understand a little more deeply about this internal potency and the external potency of the Supreme Lord. First, about the material world, as we all know, basically this material world constitutes of 24 elements. There is Pradana, it is an unmanifested nature, and there is three subtle elements, and there is five gross elements, five sense objects, five knowledge acquiring objects, and then five working senses. So these 24 elements basically constitute the material world, and this material world basically there's a constant process of creation and destruction. It's like a cyclic process which is going on simultaneously. So, like, you know, this creation basically it starts from the Prakriti. When this Prakriti is agitated by the Purusha, that the first expansion is known as Mahat, and from the Mahat comes the Ahankara, and from the Ahankara comes the mind, senses, and subtle elements, and the gross elements. And this is a process of creation. And during the time of destruction, these gross elements, you know, merges back into the subtle elements, and these subtle elements back into the Ahankara, into the Mahat, and ultimately into the Prakriti. So in this way, this process of creation and destruction, it's like a cyclic process is going on constantly in this material world. Even though the Bahiranga Shakti or the external potency of the Lord is something which is eternal, but however, the material manifestations are actually temporary. The material energy is eternal, but the material manifestations are something which is temporary. And by the influence of times, things gets created and things gets destroyed. And that is the nature of the material world. And in the material world, it's basically controlled by the Mahamaya. And this Mahamaya actually is having two potencies. One potency is called as Avarnatmika Shakti, and the second potency is called as Pratyapashmika Shakti. The Avarnatmika Shakti is like a covering potency, and this Pratyapashmika Shakti gives us a false reality. Let's say, for example, as you all know the story of Indra. When Indra was cursed by Narada Muni, he has to take the body of a hog. And basically, you know, when he takes the body of a hog, you know, he has his wife, his children, he eats all the filthy matter. And when Indra was leading its life like that, Brahma, taking the compassion on Indra, he comes to, you know, Indra in the form of a hog, and he says that, hey, you know what, actually, you are the king of the heaven, and without your absence, you know, things are not being administered properly. Please, you come back to the heavenly planets. Then Indra says that, I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm actually very happily situated in this hog's form of life. You know, I have my wife, I have my children, I'm eating this filthy matter, I'm really enjoying it. So there is no need for me to come back. So in this way, this is a potency of Mahamaya. So the first thing what Mahamaya does is that, first of all, it covers the intelligence of a person. Basically, it makes you forget of who you are. Even though a jiva is basically the part and parcel of Krishna, Nitya Krishna Das, but because of this Avarnatmika Shakti, a person forgets his real identity. But of course, this forgetting itself is not sufficient. There also has to be some identity. So that is given by this false reality called as Pratyapakshmika Shakti. And this Pratyapakshmika Shakti, what it does is that it makes you believe of what you are, like you are this material body and these are the relationships you're having with these different people. And it makes you feel that this life is real, like this is where you are and this is the reality, this is the ultimate reality. So in this way, the Mahamaya basically keeps, it's like a, you know, strong clutches, it keeps the material, the living entity within this material world, and to cross over it's very difficult. That is why it is referred to as Durga. Durga means like a fort. It is not so easy to escape the clutches of this material world. And on the other hand, if you see the spiritual world is basically is made up of the Lord's internal energy or the Antaranga Shakti of the Lord. And this can also be referred to sometimes as like Swarup Shakti. And this Swarup Shakti basically is made up of the Shuddha Sattva. And this Shuddha Sattva is basically the transcendental goodness. And this transcendental goodness, Shuddha Sattva, is not touched by this material three modes of nature, which is, you know, goodness, passion, and ignorance. And that is why it is called as Shuddha Sattva, which is beyond these three modes of nature. And these three modes of nature, this Swarup Shakti, when there is, basically it is constitutes of Sat, Chit, and Ananda, which is existence, knowledge, and bliss aspect of it. And in this Swarup Shakti, when there is a predominance of Sandini aspect or the Sat feature, that manifests as Adhar Shakti, or that which provides the sustenance. So all the trees, the houses, the fruits, the living entities, bodies, everything in the spiritual world is made up of this Adhar Shakti. Just as in the material world, every object is made up of these Panchabhutas, the earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and the material energy holds it together for a certain time. Similarly, all the entities in the spiritual world are made up of this Adhar Shakti, or this is something which provides the sustenance. The difference is that in the material world, these Panchabhutas, they are held together, which are formed by the influence of time, but eventually the form gets destroyed, and that is why it is referred to as temporary manifestations. But however, in the spiritual world, those things which are held together by the Adhar Shakti of the Lord is something which is eternal. There is no destruction. In the material world, by the influence of time, the time has a destructive, you know, influence on the things. But in the spiritual world, even though there is time, but it does not have any destructive effect on the spiritual planets. So that is why it is said in this sloka, Akhanda Vaikuntha Yoga means unbroken, unobstructed internal energy. So basically that is referred to this Sandini Shakti, which is the Adhar Shakti in the spiritual planets, which is holding all the forms. But of course, this form itself is not sufficient. There also should be some knowledge, right? So this knowledge is when there is a predominance of Samvit aspect, the Chit aspect. This Swarup Shakti manifests as Atmavidya or knowledge. So this is where all the living entities in the spiritual world understands its relationship with Krishna, and they are aware of that relationship as a supreme, you know, as the Lord, as a supreme controller and proprietor. And when there is Adan Pradan based on this knowledge, that is when there is, when this predominance of Ladini Shakti, that is when the joy and the, you know, love and joy are created, and that is called as Guhya Vidya or Preeti. So this is further elaborated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Leela, chapter number 4, 62 to verse number 62 to 68. There it says, Lord Krishna's body is eternal, Sat, full of knowledge, Chit, and full of bliss, Ananda. His one spiritual energy manifests three forms. Hladini is his aspect of bliss, Sandini of eternal existence, and Samvit of cognizance, which is also known as knowledge. O Lord, you are the support, you are the support of everything. The three attributes, Hladini, Sandini, and Samvit, exist in you as one spiritual energy. But the material modes which causes happiness, misery, and mixture of the two do not exist in you, for you have no material qualities. The essential portion of Sandini potency is Shuddha Sattva. As I mentioned before, the Shuddha Sattva, basically there is no contamination of these three modes of nature. That is why it is called as Shuddha Sattva, and Lord Krishna's existence rests upon it. And the mother, Krishna's mother, father, abode, house, bedding, seats, and so on are all transformations of Shuddha Sattva. Basically, it is referring to this Adhar Shakti of the Lord. Basically, all these forms in the material world are actually created by this Adhar Shakti of the Lord. And the condition of pure goodness, Shuddha Sattva, in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead is revealed without any covering, is called Vasudeva. In that pure state, the Supreme Godhead, who is beyond the material senses and who is known as Vasudeva, is perceived by my mind. The essence of Samvit potency is knowledge that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Lord Krishna. All other kinds of knowledge, such as knowledge of Brahman, are its components. As I explained before, this Samvit potency, is Chit potency, is the one which gives a knowledge. The Sandini gives the existence, and the Chit Samvit potency gives the knowledge. And the essence of Hladini potency is the love of God. The essence of love of God is emotion, bhava. And the ultimate development of emotion is mahabhava. So this is a brief description of spiritual world and the material world, how those two things are different, and how the spiritual world is described as the Akhanda Vaikuntha Yoga, which is unbroken and unobstructed, whereas everything in the material world, the manifestations, is basically just nothing but temporary. So the second point the Lord makes in here is the how he himself actually has a very great respect towards a Brahmana and a Vaishnava. So now let's try to discuss a little bit about a Brahmana or a Vaishnava. So when you say a Brahmana or a Vaishnava, let's say that someone wants to be called as a Brahmana. That means that a designation. That means that for any person to have a designation, to acquire a designations, there are two things. The first thing is that there should be an eligibility, and second thing is a qualification. For example, let's say that a person wants to acquire a designation of being a doctor. Let's say that someone wants to become a doctor. So two things are required, eligibility and a qualification. So if someone wants to become a doctor, what he has to do? He basically has to enroll himself in a medical school and then get educated and then get trained, and then he can acquire the designation of being called as a doctor. But however, that's a qualification aspect. But however, even before a person can enroll himself into a medical school, I don't know in the US, but at least in India, there's like a competitive exam. Like all the students, like once in a year, they prepare for this competitive exam. And like thousands of students prepare for this competitive exam, and only very few of them actually get a chance to even being admitted into this medical college. So that means that you may have a desire to become a doctor, but that doesn't mean that if you don't have an eligibility, you're not even allowed to even to enroll in the medical school. So that's the eligibility. Basically, that means that you have to show your intelligent, you know, that means that you have to prove your intelligent, you know, intelligence, that you have sufficient intelligence and you have sufficient comprehensive skills, even to be acquired, to even to acquire this knowledge. So that is called as eligibility. But that doesn't mean that simply you have an eligibility doesn't mean that you will have a qualification. Those two are different things. First, you have eligibility. That is a basic criteria, which is most of the times it is like a naturally acquired skills. And then comes a training aspect, which is a qualification. Let's say, for example, like someone wants to become a police or like, you know, like an army or like a soldier. So that means that, you know, there are some requirements, like you should be, I don't know, like 6 feet height, 150 pounds, like, you know, like if someone is handicapped or someone is blind, you know, I mean, forget about being an army because there is not even minimum eligibility. But that doesn't mean that if someone is 6 feet height and 150 pounds or 200 pounds, he's a soldier. No, those are two different things. So similarly, in the Sanskrit language, basically, whenever you want to understand the utility of an object, there are two things. It is called as qualification or yogyata. And this yogyata is basically are of two types. One is called as forop yogyata or the intrinsic qualification. And second is called as falopadai yogyata or functional qualification. So this is how in Sanskrit language basically we understand the utility of any object. So now let me give you an example. Let's say that you want to make a chair. Let's say that you want to make a wooden chair. So what do you need to make a wooden chair? First of all, you need a raw material. What is the raw material? The raw material you need is that you need a log of wood. Let's say that you have a piece of rosewood log. So this rosewood log, does it have an intrinsic qualification? Does the log of rosewood have the potential to become a chair? The answer is yes, of course, because it has enough strength, so it has a potential to become the chair. But now let's say that someone gives you a log of wood. Can you use that log of wood in its current form to make a chair? The answer is no, because it does not, even though it has an intrinsic qualification, it does not have a functional qualification. So what you need to do in order to acquire the functional qualification? First of all, you take a log of wood, you dry it, and you remove all the moisture content in it, and then you season it, and then you cut it into small pieces, and then you polish it. So by doing all this process, then it acquires a functional qualification to become a part of a chair. Now let's take another example. Let's say that you have a trunk of a banana tree. Can you make a chair out of a banana tree or banana trunk? No, because it's a very soft material. It does not even have an intrinsic qualification. So when there is no intrinsic qualification, there is no functional qualification at all. So similarly, now when we talk about a brahmana, basically Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvarna Maya system, Guna Karma Vibhagasa. So there are two things which Krishna mentions here, Guna and Karma. So this guna is actually like a naturally acquired quality from the birth. Guna, it's like an intrinsic nature. It's like an intrinsic qualification for a person. And then comes a karma. Karma is like a functional qualification which a person acquires through the training aspect. And of course, the karma comes after the guna. First of all, there has to be an intrinsic qualification. Then there can be training which develops a functional qualification. And also it is stated in the Bhagavatam in the 7th canto, 11th verse, if one shows the symptom of being a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya or Shudra, as described above, even if he has appeared in a different class, he should be accepted according to those symptoms of classification. So first of all, the thing is that there has to be an intrinsic qualification. There has to be guna. Let's say that if someone is having a guna of a Kshatriya, you cannot train him as a Brahmana. Or, you know, first of all, for a person to even to be called as a, qualified as a Brahmana, he should have an intrinsic qualification of having a Brahmanical qualities. Now someone may ask a question. Let's say that someone does not have a quality of a Brahmana. Can that person become a Brahmana? Yeah? Can you, like, you know, like an example given before. If you don't even have an intrinsic quality, can you develop a functional quality? I mean, ideally speaking, it's a no. But however, however, it is possible, actually. It is possible only in the process of bhakti. And the answer to that question is actually given by Sanatan Goswami in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, where he says that Tata Diksha Vidanena Dvijatvam Jayate Nrinam. I think even before we ask this question that can we develop a Brahminical qualities, I think we should ask even more a fundamental question, that first of all, why do we even want to develop the qualities of a Brahmana? See, our business is to become a devotee. Like, we want to make a devotee. Not, our business is not to make someone a Brahmana, Vaishya, Kshatriya, or Shudra. That is not our business. Our business is to make a devotee. But however, the Brahminical qualities, cultivating the Brahminical qualities will help in the process of bhakti. That is the reason why we encourage developing the Brahminical qualities. So some sattvaguna is there so that you can practice the bhakti properly. But now let's say that if someone does not have the Brahminical qualities, then that is where the bhakti yoga comes into picture, because bhakti is ahituki, means there could not be any material impediments for one in practicing bhakti. And that is why it is explained in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, Tata Diksha Vidanena Dvijatvam Jayate Nrinam. And the example given here is that just as a bell metal is turned into gold when mixed with mercury in an alchemical process, so one who is properly trained and initiated by a bona fide spiritual master immediately becomes a Brahmana. So this is where Sanatan Goswami explains how, you see, the example given is bell metal turning into gold. Like here actually he's telling that even you can change the intrinsic quality of a person. That even though a person does not have an intrinsic qualification, you can, through the process of bhakti yoga, one can develop the intrinsic qualifications. And the example I can think of is Mrigari. You know, by the association of the Narada Muni, even the Mrigari, who does not have any Brahminical symptoms, by the mercy of the association of a pure devotee, he could develop all the Brahminical qualities. And this is a uniqueness of bhakti. And this is only possible in the bhakti yoga. And that is possible only by the grace of Krishna and by his devotees. And the example here given is that of, the bell metal turning into gold. And those who are science students, you may know this, that in the periodic table, the mercury and gold, actually they are placed next to each other. Do you know that? They are in the same row. Basically, the atomic number of gold is 79 and the atomic number of mercury is 80. Basically, mercury has one proton more than gold. So in the alchemy, what they do is that they try to remove this one proton from the nucleus of this mercury, so that will turn into a gold. That's an alchemical process, and actually I personally witnessed in my childhood. There was a yogi from Nepal and he showed me. It is true, it's an alchemical process. So this is how, by the process of bhakti, he can even change that, you know, the unnecessary things in the heart can be removed. Because see, the thing is that as Krishna explained in the Bhagavad Gita, Suchinam Srimatam Gehe, means even to take birth in the family of a Brahmana, one has to have some pious credit from his past background. And one does not have a past created from the past, you know, from his past life. Basically, he takes a lower form of life. But however, by the association of a pure devotee, all the prarabdha karma is actually destroyed. So this prarabdha karma, which is actually acquired from the piety of the past birth, is actually destroyed in the process of bhakti yoga, and a person will be eligible to become into a Brahmana by the mercy of Krishna and by the mercy of his pure devotees. When this prarabdha karma is destroyed, and when a person is properly trained and initiated by a proper spiritual master, he can be called as a Brahmana, and he can develop all the required qualities. And even Mother Kunti says in the Bhagavatam that, my dear Lord, if even a person who is born in the family of a dog eater hears and repeats the chanting of your glories, offers respects to you and remembers you, he is immediately greater than a Brahmana and therefore eligible to perform sacrifices. Therefore, what is to be said of one who has seen you directly? So this is a potency of bhakti yoga. And now, but however, we must understand that a sadhaka who is still practicing on the path of bhakti, even though the prarabdha karma is destroyed at the time of initiation, but the bija, the tendency to commit sinful activity, may still remain, and it takes a gradual process for him to cleanse himself, and that is where the sadhana bhakti comes into picture. But however, for such a devotee, we must not criticize him, or we must not find faults in him. And that is what it is, even in the nectar of instruction, In the sixth verse, you know, Rupa Goswami says, Na prakritam iha bhakta janasya sangat. No, do not see the prakritatvam in the pure devotee. And because a devotee is rightly situated, even though there is some mundaneness in a devotee in the beginning phases, in the, you know, when he is a Kanishta Adhikari, but because he is properly situated, he will gradually be purified, he will gradually be cleansed. So we should not try to find a fault in a devotee, and we should not criticize it or overemphasize it. And, you know, and these types of faults can actually be broadly be classified into two categories, the faults. There are some faults which are called as Svabhava Janita faults, those faults which are arising out of one's nature, of one's behavior, and there are those faults which are actually arising out of vapusha, means that are something which are pertaining to the body. And these faults actually can be broadly be classified into 18 categories. It is said in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, second chapter, first chapter, 247 to 248. Now there are these, you can see all these 18 types of faults: perplexity, sleep, mistake, harshness of behavior, troublesome lust, flickeringness, and so on. And sometimes these qualities may apparently be present in a devotee, but as Rupa Goswami instructs, please do not try to find the faults. Do not pursue this mundaneness in a devotee. Do not try to find this prakrita bhava in a devotee. Because even we can also see some examples of a devotees where, you know, we can see occasional faults in them, like, you know, like Himsa, Dhruva Maharaj, you know the story of Dhruva Maharaj, where he showed this Himsa, violent behavior when he was killing the Yakshas. And also we see the Maharaj Parikshit, when he put a dead snake on the neck of a saintly person, by that he showed some harsh behavior. And, you know, also Bilwa Mangala Thakur, even though he was a devotee in his past life, you know, he had troublesome lust, and of course he eventually purified. And then also sometimes, even in a sannyasi, sometimes we may see that one sannyasi is favoring one person, his disciple, more than other disciples. So sometimes, you know, we may see some mundaneness even in a devotee, prakrita bhava, but as Rupa Goswami says, and even the Lord himself says, that please do not see all that false, because even those will be gradually be purified. And in this pastime of Jaya and Vijaya also did the same thing. Basically he tried to find the faults in the bodies of the four Kumaras and tried to, you know, judge the four Kumaras. So, but however, the Lord is warning that please do not do that, and Rupa Goswami is warning, please do not do that, and, you know, and even if you see such a false, please ignore those faults. Because as long as we are in this material body itself is something which is defective. As it is said in the Ayurveda Shastra, this body is made up of three doshas, you know, Vata, Pitta and Kapha. Basically, dosha. Dosha itself means a fault. Because of this fault, sometimes it may so happen that, you know, a pure devotee or a devotee sometimes may show apparent faults, but we should not exaggerate them, or we should not, you know, emphasize them very much. And only in the Lord you will not see any of these faults. Like, only Lord is capable of being faultless. And as Krishna also explained in the Bhagavad Gita, api chetu duracharo bhajante mam aninyadrak. Even if one commits most abominable action, if he is engaged in the devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated in his determination. And by doing so, basically we will try to avoid any obstacles on our path of bhakti. Otherwise, by this fault finding, it basically creates on the path of bhakti. And you know, like, even if you do not find the, you know, obstacles, they will come in your way anyway. So, but at least by deliberately not doing so, we can at least protect ourselves. Thus, I would like to conclude my talk. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.